सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। We'll chant Bhajagovindam, verses 1 to 5. Bhajagovindam, Bhajagovindam, Govindam, Bhajamudamate, Samprapte sannihite kale, nahi nahi rakshati dukrin karani. Bhajagovindam, Bhajagovindam, Govindam, Bhajamudamate, संप्राप्ते सन्निहिते काले नहि नहि रक्षति धुक्रिं करणि। मूढजहिहि धनागम तृष्णा पुरुषद्बुद्धिं मनसि वितृष्णा। यल्लभसे निज कर्मोपाकं वित्तं तेन विनोदय चित्तम्। मूढजहिहि धनागम तृष्णा पुरुषद्बुद्धि मनसि वितृष्णा। यल्लभसे निज कर्मोपाकं वित्तं तेन विनोदय चित्तम्। नारीस्तनभर नाभिदेशं दृष्ट्वा मागा मोहावेशम्। एतन्मांस विसादि विकारम् मनसि विचिन्तय वारं वारम्। नारीस्तनभरनाभिदेशं दृष्ट्वा मागा मोहावेशम्। एतन्मांस विसादि विकारं मनसि विचिन्तय वारं वारम्। नलिनी दलगत जलमति तरणं तत्त्वजीवित मतिशय चपलम्। विद्धिव्याध्यभिमानग्रस्तं लोकं शोकहतं च समस्तम्। नलिनीदलगतजलमतितरणं तद्वज्जीवितमतिशय चपलम्। विद्धिव्याध्यभिमानग्रस्तं लोकं शोकहतं च समस्तम्। यावद्वित्तोपार्जनसत्तः तावन्निच परिवारो रक्तः। पश्चा जीवति जर्जर देहे वार्तां कोऽपि न पृच्छति गेहे। यावद्वित्तोपार्जनसक्तः तावन्निच परिवारो रक्तः। पश्चा जीवति जर्जर देहे वार्तां कोऽपि न पृच्छति गेहे। भज गोविंदम भज गोविंदम गोविंदम भज मूढमते। संप्राप्ते सन्निहिते काले नहि नहि रक्षति धुक्रिं करणि। सो इन द इंट्रोडक्शन टू द भज गोविंदम एंड द फर्स्ट वर्स वी सॉ the basic thing that the Vajragovindam is trying to teach us is to do the analysis between the essential versus the non-essential. What is essential and what is non-essential? Well, I think somebody's microphone is on. Maybe it is Madhushri ji's microphone is on. Please put it in mute. Yeah, thanks. So, when Adi Shankara was walking along with his disciples on the banks of the Ganges in Varanasi, he sees an old pandit trying to memorize the grammar rules. And in that situation, he gives this beautiful song called Bhaja Govinda. Think of Govinda. Think of reality. Think of the essential, not the non-essential. And that too at the fag end of your life. So the whole thing here in Bhajagovindam is a wake-up call. To wake up to the essentials of life and not throwing our time and energy in the non-essentials of life. So in the first verse, Bhaja Govindam Bhaja Mudamate Samprate Sannihite Kale Nahi Nahi Rakshati Dukrim Karane. This is the chorus. Like I said, the first shloka is a chorus, and then next 12 verses, that is from verse 2 to 13, is given by the Guru. Then after that, from 14 to 27, 14 verses given by each of his disciples, 14 disciples. And then the last 4 shlokas again given by Adi Shankara, blessing the students to get back to the reality. So, this entire song is only telling us that the sojourn in this life is a very, very short time. So you've got to have fun, but not lose your purpose. But the problem is, majority of us are dictated by the senses and the mind, and we throw away our precious time in the frivolous stuff. So, instead of that, a wise person conserves the energy and directs it towards the higher. So, there is a way of living. What is it? It is understanding that our energy needs to be conserved and utilized towards the higher. While we can have utmost fun in this world, never lose sight of that purpose. But the problem is the temptations from the world outside and the desires inside, we get lost. Therefore he says, Bhaja Govindam, seek the self. 3 times he says, 3 times, because at the level of the body, at the level of the mind, and at the level of the intellect. At all these 3 levels, one should seek the self. So like we have studied in the 4th chapter, where we have studied verse number 24, Brahmarpanam, Brahma Havihi, Brahmagnav, Brahmanahutam, Brahma Ivatena Gantavyam, Brahma Karma Samadhina. This verse is chanted before taking food. Now, what is that verse saying? Whatever you are contacting. In this example, it is contacting food. Where are you contacting food to reach Brahman? To get the energy, utilize that energy to reach Brahman. So, contacting food for the purpose of reaching Brahman. Then what is being contacted? That is also nothing but Brahman in different name and form. Who is contacting? The individual who is Brahman, who is in different name and form. So, this whole verse is only trying to tell us that being in consciousness, moving in consciousness, existing in consciousness 24/7. So, spirituality is not a part-time, pastime hobby. It is a full-time awareness of truth. So, we keep going in and out of prayers. But once we come into our daily living, it is hardly prayerful. So, it should not be that way. It should rather be filled with the awareness of reality. So, he says, at the body level, at the mind level, at the intellect level, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Govindam Bhaja. You should only think of the reality, the substratum, not get carried away by the superficial. At the destined time, mundane activity never indeed would save you. In other words, when he saw this old man who was already at the age of 80 or so and wasting his time in trying to memorize the grammar rules, which is not what comes with us. What comes to protect us is the inner immunity, isn't it? During this COVID time, we talk about the physical immunity. But you also need in life, you need the inner immunity. We never seem to fortify the inner strength. The mind and intellect is not strong. Mind craves for the world, and the intellect is held hostage by the mind, And instead of thinking objectively as to whether what it craves for is essential or not, the intellect kind of goes along with the mind to pursue the world and goes on multiplying the desires and suffering. So therefore, he says, at the Desta in time. Now this Desta in time, you can't say it's 90 or 100. You can't say like that. It can be any minute. So in other words, it's like a dagger hanging above your head 24/7. Any minute, it can fall on you. But we take life for granted. The tendency to take life for granted and suddenly think of God when actually the knife has fallen. That's the problem. So, who is a wise person? A wise person is one who is prepared before the adversity. As a result, he or she is able to be strong during the adversity and comes out of it successful. So that entire Bhajagovindam is only a preparation. So last week I was quoting Swami Chinmayananda. He says, before the world kicks you, you kick the world. That's all he's saying. Mentally reject. The moha, another name for Bhajagovindam is moha mudgara. The delusion. The delusion that you have, which is that this, what can be achieved through the body, through the mind, through the intellect, can give me that security. That's the delusion. Whatever one can achieve through the body, mind and intellect is incapable of giving security. They are good enough for transactional purpose. They cannot give you that security. So you've got to remove that delusion. And if you got to remove that delusion, you got to look at the world and your already pre-existing conditionings within you. You got to look at them, examine them. So this entire Bhajagovindam is all about examining, re-examining your whole life. Once you re-examine, then the delusion goes away. Moha mudgara, like in the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna asks Arjuna, has this helped you to remove the delusion? And Arjuna says, yes, my delusion is gone. Nashto moha smitir labdva. What prashada is this? It is your prashada. Due to your prashada, due to the knowledge, my delusion is gone. So we need to pull back and question. So this whole Bhajagovindam is 3P. What is it? Pause, ponder and plunge. Take a pause, ponder again, question, and then having re-evaluated the whole thing, now with a right understanding, plunge, contact the world. That's all he's saying. That is Bhajagovindam. So it gives you that detachment, the ability, the strength to deal with the world without being overpowered by the enamors of the world. So, at the destined time, mundane activity never indeed would save you. Now, in verse number 2 and verse number 3, he directly talks about the two motivations generally make people move around in the world only because of these two, which is acquisition and enjoyment. Majority of the people are stuck in the pursuit of acquisition and enjoyment. They don't have anything beyond that. So, he is asking us to question that. Is this the way to live your life? Or is there a better way to live? And he talks about it. So, let us chant verse number 2. Mudajahihida nagama Krishna Purusad buddhim manasive Krishna. Mudajahihida nagama Krishna Purusad buddhim మనసి వితృష్ణ యల్లభసే నిజ కర్మోపాతం విత్తం తేన వినోదయ చిత్తం యల్లభసే నిజ కర్మోపాతం విత్తం తేన వినోదయ చిత్తం మూఢజహీహిద నాగమ కృష్ణ కురు సద్బుద్ధి మనసి వితృష్ణ యల్లభసే నిజ కర్మోపాతం విత్తం తేన వినోదయ చిత్తం. Again, he is using the word muda. Muda means fool. Muda jahihi dana agama krishna. He says, O fool, give up your thirst for aggrandizing wealth. He is not telling us to give up pursuit of wealth. He is telling us that you got to give up the thirst for aggrandizing wealth. Krishna, the craving, that irresistible earning in your mind, that exaggerated value for the wealth in the mind has to be given up. That's all he's saying. But unfortunately, a lot of people misunderstand all these things. See, Adi Shankara is a sannyasi. So they think, oh, he's a sannyasi, so he's telling this. They think that he's asking us to give up the wealth. No, he's not saying that. He's only saying, give up the thirst for aggrandizing wealth. Let the wealth not be the be-all and end-all of your life. O fool, give up your thirst for aggrandizing wealth. Now, if he just says this and leaves it, it's not a complete advice. What does he say? How do you do this? Create in your mind the thought of reality instead of the thirst. So, Kuru Sadbuddhin Manasini Krishna. You got to develop Satbuddhi. The Buddhi has to be Sattvic. In the Bhagavad Gita we studied, no? Sattvic, Rajasic, Tamasic Buddhi. So, he says, you got to uplift your Buddhi to the level of Sattvic Buddhi. Sadbuddhi. Kuru Sadbuddhim Manasini Krishna. So, he says, give up the thirst for aggrandizing wealth. Create in your mind the thought of reality instead of the thirst. And he says, whatever you gain from your action, yallabase nijakarma upadhi. Vittam tena vinodayati. Content your mind with that wealth obtained. With that wealth that you have obtained, be contented. That's what he said. You've got to be contented with the wealth that you have obtained. From your hard work, from your effort, from contribution. So physically, you got to act with an attitude of contribution, and whatever comes, accept that as a prasad and be contented with that. And the intellect should be constantly exposed to the higher knowledge, whereby the thirst for the world in the mind dissolves. That's all he says. You have these three equipments. So, here he is talking about the motivation to acquire. So, what are we doing from the time we wake up till in the morning, till the time we go to bed? All we are doing is we are going on acquiring, acquiring, acquiring. And why are we doing that? To be able to exchange what we have acquired for the pleasures of life, enjoyment. You build a tennis court and then you enter and play. So, you are creating a platform to acquire and to contact the sense object, exchanging the acquisition, that so that you can get the pleasure from the world and enjoy. So the two motivations is acquisition and enjoyment. So in this verse he's talking about acquisition. In Sanskrit it's called kanchana. In the next verse he's talking about enjoyment, and he's calling it as Kamini. So he says, O fool. Again, like we said last week, O fool, meaning he's reminding us that you have the potential to rise above it. You did not have the potential, he's not going to talk and waste his time and energy. Since you have the potential, he says, O fool. You're a fool because you are throwing it away, the potential. O fool, give up your thirst for aggrandizing wealth. You cannot give up anything for the simple reason your mind will be attached to it. You can physically give up things, but mentally you cannot. The mental giving up is possible only when the mind is escalated to the higher aspects of life. Therefore, on a daily basis, the mind needs to be exposed to the higher aspects of life through the shastras, through the study of the shastras, in the early hours of the day. Thus, slowly, slowly, when your thoughts dwell on the reality and begin to taste the reality, once it is established there, thereafter in the mind, there can be no craving for the world. So there is no point telling the mind, you know, you should not crave for this. The mind will naturally crave because it doesn't know anything else. What the mind knows is only the world. So only when you expose the mind to something higher, then slowly, slowly, the mind begins to enjoy the higher aspects of life. And when that happens, the lowly thoughts, the lower thoughts reduce, dissolve. So while you climb the ladder, you've got to keep your right foot firmly on the upper rung. Only then can you remove the left foot from the lower rung. Otherwise, you will fall down. So he says, establish your intellect in the thoughts of reality. Dwell on them. And this has to be done consistently. Otherwise, it's not possible. So a lot of people, through misunderstanding of this verse, they became anti-wealth. You can neither be anti-wealth nor wealth-centric. That's the whole idea. You've got to choose the middle path. Neither wealth-centric, money-centric, nor anti-money or anti-wealth. So, you've got to follow the middle path, the path of reality, the higher aspects of life. So, once you do that, then there's nothing wrong in having wealth or having wealth. It doesn't matter because internally you'll always be rich. Wealth gives you an option to function in a certain way. That's all. So therefore he says, you don't have to discard wealth. Reject the value for the wealth mentally. That's the thing. That value has to be dropped. That is more difficult. Dropping wealth is relatively easy. Relatively. But dropping the value, not possible. So, he says, you got to entertain the thought of reality instead of the thirst for that. And whatever you gain from your action. So, he's not against gaining, that means. So, he's saying, you gain whatever comes because every action will have its own results. And whatever comes, having dedicated it for a higher purpose, whatever comes, accept that as a prasad and be contented. Now, when we say be contented, does it mean that we should not grow? No. There are, again, this has to be understood correctly. There is something called as pig's contentment and true contentment. Pig's contentment is, pig is contented in slush, in dirt. And it doesn't want to put in any effort to get out. It doesn't see anything wrong in being there. And it's enjoying that. It just stays there. Tamasic, lazy, lethargic, indolent, heedless. So that's a different kind of a contentment. which is not contentment in the first place. What contentment he's talking about then, he's saying, if you are not contented, when you are discontented, what are you doing? You are not happy with what you have now. You are tying the present happiness to future achievement. So when you tie your present happiness to future achievement, you are never happy. If I get that, I'll be happy. If I get that, I'll be happy. So you are never happy. And how can you, who is discontented, agitated, do a proper course of action? You've got to be calm, composed to be able to do proper course of action. Therefore, he says, first, find contentment in the present. Be happy with what you have. And since you also see the potential in you to rise to a certain height, you execute actions with proper planning and all that, and rise to the higher heights. There's nothing wrong. And while you are putting in efforts to rise to the certain heights, the results don't come immediately. The results take time for it to come. And whatever keeps coming, accept them as a prasad. Be contented with your mind with what wealth has been obtained. That's all he says. So when the sun rises, the thick snow melts. All our attachments and thirst and earning, everything melts. The exaggerated value goes away. The right value comes. The moment the right value comes, the mind becomes calm. The mind becomes calm in whichever field you apply yourself, you're able to function better. That's the whole idea. Now you may ask then, how is it possible that in the world we see that a lot of people who have this thirst for wealth and attached and agitated still are able to aggrandize more wealth? You say only best actions can get. See, the whole thing is a very relative concept. What you need to understand is, among the people, if among the people if there is a person who is more composed, he will certainly be more successful. But compared to people who are sitting and not moving, not acting, even a person who is acting with agitation will cover a certain ground and will certainly be having X amount of wealth. But that wealth would only be a curse and not a blessing. So therefore, he says, learn to be content with what you have and aspire for more. This is the idea that Adi Shankara is presenting here. He therefore says, you need to really work on your mind and rehabilitate. Wrong values. There's been a value for the world. It's like you have the value for name and form and not for the material with which it is being made. Your value is for the chair. Your value is not for the wood. So, if you value something perishable, you will certainly be affected. And when you are affected, you are blaming the name and form. No, name and form's nature is to change. So, due to your wrong thinking, you identified with it. Nothing wrong. Name and form is not agitating you or affecting you. Your identification with name and form does. That's all he's saying. Your identification with name and form is what is giving you the suffering. Therefore, he says that exaggerated value removed by gaining the real wealth, knowledge of the self. Then you will be contented and then you can aspire and grow more. Next verse. Nāri-stana-bhara-nābhi-desham drishvā-māgā-mohā-vesham Nāri-stana-bhara-nābhi-desham drishvā-māgā-mohā-vesham ఏతన్మాం సవసాది వికారం మనసి విచింతయ వారం వారం. ఏతన్మాం సవసాది వికారం మనసి విచింతయ వారం వారం. నారీ స్తన భర నాభీదేశం దృష్ట్వా మాధా మోహావేశం. ఏతన్మాం సవసాది వికారం మనసి విచింతయ వారం వారం. Seeing the bosom and navel of woman, do not fall a prey to frenzied delusion. It is a modification of flesh and fat, etc. Reflect well in your mind over and over again. Now this is a verse which again is criticized by a lot of people, because he's talking about woman as an example. What we need to understand here is, he is first of all addressing 14 of his disciples who are men. Therefore he is giving this example. The most powerful of all the desires is the desire for the opposite sex. The enjoyment drawn from the contact with the opposite sex involves all the five senses. So, this is the height of all the enjoyments that he takes as an example to make us question the enjoyment urge. He could have given any example, but he gives the example of the desire to contact the opposite sex, wherein all the five senses are involved, which is the highest that one can experience at the sense level. So when he's talking about enjoyment, he gives that as an example, not because he wants to reduce woman as an object, nothing like that. It is not to be interpreted that way. All he's trying to say is, whichever object you are contacting for the purpose of enjoyment, he's asking us to intellectually pull back a little bit, question, re-evaluate, and then find. That's all. That's all he's saying. So he says, this attraction for the opposite sex, what are you really attracted by? You are attracted by the physical contours. What are they? They are basically modifications of flesh and bones, and blood. That's all it is. So, in time, the beauty is robbed. Everything is taken away. But the mind is running, then you are not able to even think. So he says, when the mind is running, pull back and question. This is called Pratipaksha Bhavana. It's the technique that Adi Shankara is asking us to employ here with reference to any sense contact. To communicate that, he gives a powerful example. That's about it. But it's not only with reference to this example, with reference to any sense contact. Whatever your mind is entertaining value for, question that. So he says, when you do that, it's called Pratipaksha Bhavana. It's an attitude. It's a bhav at the mental level, which you use your intellect and question. So when you exercise the intellect upon any craving, any yearning for enjoyment, any sense contact, begin to see it from different angles. Like Theodore Tilton's poem, "Even This Shall Pass Away." Even there he says that. Below on the marriage bed, whispering to his soul, he said, "Though no monarch has ever pressed a fairer bosom to his breast, mortal flesh must come to clay, even this shall pass." So once that capacity is retained while contacting, You cannot become a slave to that HR. That's all. He's teaching us how to be a master with reference to wealth and enjoyment and not become a slave. So he's actually teaching us how to enjoy, how to master wealth and enjoyment. But unfortunately, people take it as a very negative thing. They are, what is this he's saying? So he says, it's the modification of flesh and fat. So any sense contact craving that you have, take it and question it. What is it? What is it maximum going to give to you? Analyze. The moment you analyze, the craving goes. The problem disappears. See, in management, we call it gravity. There are situations which are gravity situations, which you can do nothing about. You have to accept. There are situations where you can do something to bring about certain changes. So you need to clearly analyze and accept what are the situations that one can do something, what are the situations that one cannot do anything, therefore one has to accept and move on. So then you will not waste your energy or sit and crib about the areas of gravity. So, exactly like that, if you analyze what is today looking to you as a very big problem, will no more be a problem. A lot of times this is what is happening to all of us. When we are disturbed and we go to a psychologist, or to a friend or an elderly person, or to a spiritual person, or anybody for that matter. They allow us, firstly, to speak our mind, to share our thoughts, speak out. So the fact that we have offloaded all our troubles and worries and everything, the fact that we have emptied it itself, we become a little quiet, calm. And the fact that somebody listened to us gives us a feel-good factor. Then we are now ready to listen. And when we are ready to listen, all that the other person will do is this analysis. And the moment they do the analysis, as they begin to do the analysis, and when you go along with them, you realize that actually it is stupidity, there is no problem. Then you see it makes sense. Whatever he said, she said makes sense to go back. The problem is the moment we go back, we move away from the awareness and analysis, and again the desire comes, the whole thing comes. Then again we think, what is this? Again problem has come up. So this is the thing. The moment intellect comes and scrutinizes, there is no problem. And when the intellect is not there, mind brings in that problem. So the samsara is the mind. So we think it is in the object. But no, it's in the mind. Ask yourself, would that same object give you pleasure if you did not have the desire for it? Same amount of pleasure? Even if it gives you pleasure? It's a question that one needs to ask. So, there are people who court cigarette for joy. There are people who run away from cigarette for joy. So if the joy was there in the object, in the cigarette, it should give to everyone. And if the joy was there in the object, it should give to you every time you contact it. But in the second cigarette and the third cigarette and the fourth and the fifth and the nth, the happiness, the pleasure keeps reducing, diminishing. So then where is it? What is actually happening? So the moment we pull back and analyze, then we understand. When you say that it is the beautiful flowing of the hair that is attractive and giving me joy? And if she has to remove the whole lot of hair and give you, would you be happy? If you say that beautiful line of teeth that she has is what is giving me the joy, if she removes it and gives it to you, you'll run away from it. So, when the things are all put together and unified and in one piece, and in that young blood is flowing, the whole thing is attractive. So what is uniting it? The self inside. So you are actually attracted by the sense, but you are believing that you are getting it from this. This is the delusion. So what is actually attracting is the self. You are attracted by the self in it. But you are thinking it's the external. And external is something that is temporary, passing, fleeting. Therefore, firstly, there is so much of effort in getting it. And as you are getting it, it's passing and fleeting. So, after tremendous effort, what you got, you realize it's nothing. Without it, you are suffocated. Like, we get neutralized. That state is called neutralization. Like, you are not getting pleasure simply because you can breathe. I can breathe oxygen. Wow, what a pleasure. We don't say that. But if somebody comes and closes our nose tightly, we'll be suffocated. We'll want to do anything to, you know, become free from his fingers so that we can breathe normally. So, we are not enjoying the oxygen, but when it is denied, we are suffocated. So therefore, what is this enjoyment? Is it there in the object? Where is it? What is this object? Why it is not giving joy to everyone? Why it is not the same amount of joy? Why it is not giving me the same amount of joy every time I contact it? Why it is diminishing? Once I start doing this analysis, now look at it from a different angle intellectually, then the power that it has to attract me goes away. That's the whole idea. This is how you neutralize it. Then you can deal with it. Otherwise, the mind has created an exaggerated thirst and running. And how much ever you contact, you will be in displeasure. So therefore, resist, question it. Reflect well in your mind over and over again. Why? Because you have been thinking about the sense objects over and over again for janmas. If not janmas, forget about janmas. In this life itself, from the time you are born, you have only been entertaining the thoughts of the world. Since you have been entertaining the thoughts of the world so much, now, suddenly just because you studied one day, did analysis one day, doesn't mean that you got power over it. No. How is it possible? A habit is formed. It all starts by it. Then it becomes bit. Bit becomes habit. Habit becomes habit. So, over a period of time, we have conditioned ourselves. And just because we expose ourselves to a little bit of knowledge, a little bit of analysis, doesn't mean we would have gained control over it. Not possible. We will gain control over it when we do over and over and over again. That's why he says, you've got to do it again and again. Varam, varam. The so-called boring thing has to be done on a consistent basis. And what we have been doing is, the so-called entertaining, pleasure-giving stuff we have been doing again and again and strengthened it. The mind has been thinking about the sense objects again and again. It is so strong today. A little bit of effort, when you put it, it will be nothing in front of that strong mind. So therefore, the key here is consistent application. That's why he says, varam, varam, again and again. That's the difficulty. The consistency is the crux. We'll all do a few days, few months, but the consistency will not be there. And as long as the consistency is not there, you will not be establishing yourself in the knowledge. You will see that the mind only is overpowering. That's why a lot of people say, sir, I've been studying for quite many years now, but nothing much is happening. Why? How can anything much can happen unless you really do it consistently? Two things have to be done consistently. We'll talk about all those things later, but as a gist I'm saying, both the withdrawal and the knowledge has to be done consistently. Remember the formula that we discussed when we did the summary of the third chapter in the end. Sri Krishna gives this. W for withdrawal plus K for knowledge. W plus K underlined by C according to your capacity. Circled by another C which is consistency. So W, withdrawal from the world, plus K, knowledge of the reality, underlined by your capacity. Don't overdo it. Like, and then you've got to do it over and over again, consistently. It's only through consistency you will build the intellect. Not possible otherwise. So therefore, you should not run away from what you are contacting. You should actually open your eyes fully and see it as it is. When you see it as it is, then you will not run after it. We are not seeing anything as it is. We are seeing the object as our mind is projecting. We are not seeing it as it is. The day we see it as it is, the power shifts from the object to us. So all he is telling us is, see it as it is. He's not telling us to run away. He's telling us to see it as it is. Do you see it as it is? So therefore he says, all these are modifications, subject to change. Modifications means subject to change and perishable. It has a shelf life. So understand that these are all changing, fleeting, passing, perishable, shelf life stuff. So only useful for transactional purpose. Iron and gold is good for buying iron and gold. So with that kind of a right attitude, contact them. You will retain the capacity, not getting overpowered by the senses. This is called pratipaksha bhavana. An intellectual reevaluation by educating ourselves about the object that we are craving to contact. Is it coming from there? Where is it coming? Why it is not there? There were certain objects that was giving me pleasure earlier. Now I am not thinking of them. Why? The desire is not there. When the desire is not there, I am not enjoying them anymore. So now the desire is there for something else. So what is the guarantee? So when you start doing this analysis and get rooted, then it doesn't bother. So this is how he is basically saying, like Mahatma Gandhi says, find the purpose, the means will follow. Verse number 2. Now he's saying, analyze, understand about the world, and then enter and contact it. Clear understanding. Otherwise, the mind has an exaggerated value. It keeps running and you will suffer. This is the message. Next verse. Nalini dhalagata jalamati taralam tatvajivitamati shaya chapalam vidyavyadhyabhimana grastam lokam shokahatam cha samastam. Nalini dalagata jalagati taralam tatva jivita ishaya chapalam vidyavyadhyabhimana grastam lokam shokahatam cha samastam. Water on a lotus leaf is extremely unsteady. So also is life very, very unstable. Understand that the entire world is consumed by disease and conceit, is smitten with sorrow. So what he's saying is something similar to what Lord Buddha said. Lord Buddha also said, you know, the world is full of pain and sorrow. Water on a lotus leaf is extremely unstable. From the total water in the pond, little water gets on top of the leaf of lotus which is there in the water. And the lotus surface is greasy. So, the water on the lotus leaf is like mercury on paper. It's free flowing. Any minute, any second, it can fall back into the pond. He compares that to our life. From the total, this little ego has come up. And we call this as individual. Any second, any minute, it can go back. It is that unsteady. So, just like the water on the lotus leaf is extremely unsteady, so also is our life very, very unstable. It's not steady. You are taking it for granted. Understand the entire world, the objects of the world, anything other than the subject. Object, when you say, everything that can be objectified. So the body can be objectified, even the mind is objective, the intellect is objective. So anything at that level which can be objectified is the world. So he says, understand the entire world. Nothing in the world is exempt. Is consumed by disease, subject to disease, and conceit, is smitten with sorrow. See, all he wants to say here is the five metamorphic changes. Birth, growth, disease, decay, death. Birth, growth, disease, decay, death. It is common for the physical body. It's born, it grows, gets into disease, decays, and perishes, dies. Nobody's body is free. So this is applicable at the mental level and intellectual level also. He says, it is smitten with sorrow. What does he mean by saying it is smitten with sorrow? Shokam. If you recollect, when we studied Bhagavad Gita, we did that analysis. He said, raga leads to what? Shoka. And shoka leads to moha. Raga means attachment. And if you have attachment, you will have shok. You cannot become free from shoka without freeing yourself from the attachment. That's all he's saying. So the world is full of sorrow because of our attachment. That's what he's saying. It's smitten with sorrow. Because everything here is in a constant flux of change. Nothing is permanent. So, when you are attached, to put in effort and get that object itself is painful. Worse than that is to retain it. That is even worse. You can somehow put in effort and then come to a certain status. But to retain that status is a torture. So it's a constant struggle. That's what he's trying to say. So, therefore he's saying, it's not worth being attached. So he says, do not get attached to something that is capable of passing and fleeting. Deal with them only for transactional purpose. And you say, listen, yaar, for a few days I'll work hard. I'll get it. And then I will become detached. There what is happening is, you are getting your time for granted. See, the only thing that you are sure of is this moment. Next minute, nobody is sure of. And yet, in the mind, it is so hard for us to believe. We are so comfortably believing that, you know, I'm going to be there. Just take it for granted. So he says, this is smitten with sorrow. Even contacting and getting it is struggle. Once you get it, to retain it is even more struggle. And it keeps on increasing your desire. You know, after getting, the desire is gone. You're not happy. And desire modifies further into greed, jealousy, this, that. All kinds of modifications. Kama, krodha, lobha, moha, madha, matsarya, bhaya. All this happens. And all this agitates you, disturbs. Therefore, he says, there is a root of following your desires. There is a root of controlling your desires and following a higher purpose. These are the two choices you have. Those who are wise, they follow the latter, which is set a higher goal, higher purpose, work towards that, get whatever comes out of it as a prasad, be contented with that and live life with what you've got and slowly grow more. The other is run after chasing desires. Hardly you succeed, and even if you succeed, hardly you succeed in retaining it, and even if you succeed in that, you are not happy, you want more, you are disturbed. So this is what Bhagavad Gita says. A rajasic person cooks but eats sin. Whereas a sattvic person eats the remnants of sacrifice. He or she works for a higher goal, sacrifices, and then enjoys what comes out of it. And adjusts his or her life to what has been earned. That way, they are peaceful and steadily grow and enjoy also. So these are the two choices. Now, left to our mind, we will only go by the former, chase the desire. And chasing the desire gives you the kick, that joy in the beginning, but over a period of time, it only gives you sorrow. Again, in the Gita 18th chapter, we studied, no? The contact-born enjoyments are what? Pleasurable in the beginning, painful in the end. Whereas, enjoyment that comes from sense control, directed towards the goal, activities which gives you joy, those kind of things are painful in the beginning, pleasurable in the end. So therefore he says, your purpose in life here is to reach that ultimate, not get lost in this frivolous things. If you do, then you are finished. So, our life, he compares to the little water on the lotus leaf. Any second, any minute, but if you see the things that we are attached to, it's incredible. It's just incredible. To the people, to the wealth, to name, fame, power, position, everything without any analysis. Don't sit on that chair because the chair is something that is subject to modification. You should sit on the wood only, not on the chair. Because wood is permanent, chair is name and form. Mental investments should be in satya, not in mithya. If it is in mithya, you will suffer. So those people who waste their time and energy in the pursuit of the objects of the world, they will suffer. It's a fear. It's a torture. So the life of a wise person and the life of an unwise person, they are exactly opposite each other. Diametrically opposite. Unwise follows the desire. Wise follows the wisdom. Those whom truth and wisdom lead can gather honey from a weed, says Pineapple in the Bee poem. So the route that the wise follow is self-control, not self-denial. But the route that the unwise follow is self-indulgence. And the route that the unwise follow, the self-indulgence, is pleasurable in the beginning, painful in the end. The life that the wise follow is painful in the beginning, but pleasurable in the end. Pleasurable in the end doesn't mean only in the end. Pleasurable in the end means in the due course. And not only it is, it's like compounded interest. The compounded interest multiplies. You know, like they talk about this COVID situation also, they say how the cases multiply and grow. It's just mind-boggling. So, every case, and it comes and suddenly it goes to, now you have crossed so many millions. So, how exactly like that steadily he will be growing? So, one is the path of growth, other is the path of swelling.
I'm good, how are you, Doc? Everyone is talking about this.
Majority of the people are following the path of swelling. Very few follow the path of growth. Life means there has to be action, there has to be growth, there has to be awareness, there has to be emotions. Growth, awareness, emotions, actions. If these are not there, then it's not life. Madhuji, can you Madhuji, can you please mute it? I don't know if I can, I don't have the permission. So water on a lotus leaf is extremely unsteady. So also is life very, very unstable. See, in the Prahlada Charitra, Prahlada does this analysis. It's a very, very interesting analysis. Assuming a person lives 100 years, the first 4 years almost is like sleep. So we discount that. So next 96 years, one third of our life we sleep, goes in sleep. So out of 96, 33 you remove. Then what is left? 63 years. In this 63 also, goes in mostly, you know, getting ready, this, that, many of the mechanical stuff. If you remove that, maybe another 13 years we can remove. So finally it comes to 50. This is if you live 100. Right? 50 into 365 is what? Hardly anything. So you live for such a few days only. But that awareness is missing. The total picture is missing. See, anything is so attractive when your focus goes to that particular thing. When you zoom in and zoom out. When you zoom in and then, you know, you focus on the particular thing, it looks so attractive. But when you zoom out and see the whole picture, the exaggerated value goes away. Then there is no suffering. So he says, understand that the entire world, meaning the objects, they are consumed by disease, passing, fleeting, deteriorating, and is smitten by sorrow. They deceive you. They are make-believe things. So if you go and sit on it, thinking that that will give you security, you will suffer. Nobody can save you. So therefore, he says, you invest in reality. Swamiji says the American dollar's value is going on increasing because in the dollar they print, in God we trust. It is not the reason. He's just giving it to give us a viewpoint. That's all. In God we trust. What do you really trust? Do you trust the unreal passing or do you trust the real permanent? So while that little time is there, become aware. Time and tide doesn't wait for anyone. This water on a lotus leaf is extremely unsteady. So also is life very, very unstable. Understand that the entire world is consumed by disease and conceit. Sorrow. So remember sorrow when he says the sorrow is not, world is not giving you sorrow. Your attachment to the world. If the attachment is not there, world is a beautiful place to enjoy. So you think, oh, world is sorrow. So what do? Commit suicide. No, that's not what he's saying. In fact, if you understand Vedanta, you will never think of committing suicide. Because when you commit suicide, anybody, they are only getting rid of the physical body. The vasanas, the subtle body is still there. So accordingly, you will be born again and again. The same challenges you will have to face. The same karma exists. So there's no point in doing this. So you will never think of that. You will never contemplate of such an end. So what they are saying is, it's not ending the existence in this body. That's the solution. The solution is ending the mental thought flow to the object. So the problem is not the world. The problem is my thought flow towards the world. My, you know, consistent, unintelligent thought flow towards the world is now made it so powerful. The moment I withdraw and remove the attachment, reduce it, then the sorrow reduces. Then actually the world becomes a beautiful place to enjoy. Is what the scriptures want to say. They are not trying to run away, make us run away from the world, go into, you know, your puja room all the time. That's not the idea here. So let's conclude now. So, Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyairva Budhyatmanava Prakate Swabhavat Karomi Adhyad Sakalam Parasmai Narayana Eti Samarpayami. Hari Om. See you all next week.
Hari Om Guruji.